Everything in wellness for me that I have built or that I have aspired to represent and create in the world is having people know that they are their own doctor.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, welcome. I am in Canggu, Bali. This is your host, Joel Schroeder. Today's guest is joining us in person. We've got Miss Tori Holmes in the house. Tori, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I'm here. So we've already started the journey.
Yep. So for those that are listening to this on audio, you can head over to the website at unconventionallifeshow.com to watch the video version of this as well. So I met Tori actually at a breathwork training this past week in Bali. You are from Vancouver, Canada, and we were roommates, and this woman started sharing her story with me. And I was just one of these moments where I was like, wait, what? And wait, again? And you did, huh? And I was like, girl, we got to get you on the podcast. And so for those of you that don't know Tori, she is a wellness entrepreneur. You've co-founded several different companies, most recently Nectar Juicery. You're a two-time author, which we're actually going to talk about one of her books, which I've got right here in person, called Beauty Water, which goes into hydration recipes for wellness and self-care. So we'll talk about that. And what I love most about your story, at the age of 35, you've had cancer twice. Yeah. And before then, you actually rode across the Atlantic Ocean from Spain to the Caribbean for 86 days to break a record. And listeners, check this out. Halfway through the journey, Tori gets hit by a 60-foot wave, breaks her ribs.
There's big waves out there.
Yeah, breaks her ribs and continues to row. In the middle of the ocean.
86 days, so it was like probably not my best venture. There's other things I've been better at, you know. It wasn't fast.
But talk about sheer determination and willpower and, you know, to go through all of that and that process. So there's a lot of themes I want to get into, but I also know in a lot of ways you're like a little wellness doula, where you take a lot of Ayurvedic principles, a lot of wellness principles, and you make them accessible for alternate ways to heal yourself, to treat yourself, to make yourself feel really good. And you do it a lot of different ways. So welcome to the show, Tori. Fill in any gaps I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
For me, everything in wellness for me that I have built or that I have aspired to represent and create in the world is having people know that they are their own doctor and that your wellness is your human experience. So it's how you are experiencing yourself. That's it. How do you want to feel? And are you feeling that thing? And do you have the tools to get from A to B? Mm-hmm. And through my own wellness journeys and doing adventures that have pushed me to my like human spirit breaking point, I just, I've been fortunate enough to be really humbled quite a few times in my life. Mm-hmm. And just every single time the road comes back to you, or like for me, it came back to me, like a meeting of me and a life leveling. And in some ways I feel like I've had cancer a couple times so that I could like go through this route to be like, okay, every single time it's been a life level. It's been a check-in. It's being like, what's working, what's not working. Am I in alignment? And it's never been about external success. Every single time for me, when I've been off track, has been how I've been feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's take us, you know, back to kind of what life looked like. So I know you've been diagnosed with both breast cancer and then also cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. And I also know this is the first time you're really sharing about this publicly. So unconventional lifers, we're going deep. And so what was happening in your life, you know, during your first diagnosis? Because you're only 35. So it's a pretty not typical thing to happen at a young age. And if we were a fly on the wall seeing Tori's life, like what were you doing? How are you spending your time? Like what, give us some of like who you were in the world and what happened during that first diagnosis.
So probably just to set the foundation, the first time I had breast cancer probably was one of the best gifts of my entire life. And I'll tell you why. When I was 21, I rowed across the Atlantic from Spain to the Caribbean in a 24-foot ocean rowing boat, 24 feet by 6 feet, kind of looked like a massive dragon boat. If you're familiar with that, with a hard dome tent at the back.
Wow.
I'd never rode a day in my life. I'm from the prairies in Canada, so it's like, it's not a lot of Olympic rowers in that area, just saying, you know, this is like a lot of swamps.
And just so for those that aren't seeing Tori on video, she's like this beautiful blonde, like really petite, just, yeah, not like, like big shouldered rower.
Well, I often, like, when people are like, oh, you know, I'll be talking about it, it'll come up and be like, oh, you rode across the Atlantic. And I was like, no, I rode across the Atlantic. And they'll be like, oh, you sailed across the Atlantic. And I've had friends who, like, 2 years later, be like, oh, my friend Tori, you sailed across. And I was like, I rode. And then they're like, are you kidding me? It's like, yeah, I told you that like 20 times. So yeah, I actually didn't even know that this was a thing you could do at the time. I had never rode. I was a personal shopper living in Dublin with my boyfriend at the time. And for total transparency, I was drunk in a pub. You gotta be careful when you go to Ireland, because crazy things can happen. And this pamphlet lands on the pub table, and in big bold letters, it says, the ultimate test of the human spirit. And I was like, I'm in. And my boyfriend and another friend of ours, we agreed to do this row. We woke up the next day, and obviously there was a few people who were also in on it, but you know, when they sobered up, they were like, yeah, okay, I got better things to do than row across the Atlantic Ocean. And the like, dun, 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 it was like 90,000 euro, which at 21 was like millions of dollars. Like, yeah. I think I was making like 9 euro an hour. And I just got it in my head. And I had this really cool thing with the rows. I have no, and still today, I almost don't know how this happened, but I could see myself physically to a point where I could feel it crossing the finish line almost from the first time. And I had no data. Like, I'd also never been in the ocean. I'd never really been on a boat.
So this 21-year-old drunk at a pub in Ireland with her boyfriend gets this little fate note in the piece of a paper on your table. And I think, listeners, we've all had these moments, these invitations that seemingly appear out of nowhere. And you say yes.
Yeah, I'm like, I say yes. And I also am that friend, which I already told Jules this, because we've like made 100 plans together. If you invite me, and if I say I'm going to do something, I would say, not everything has been successful for me, but my track record is almost 100%. Like, I do what I say I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but it's the way that I came in the world.
Yeah.
So I said I was going to do it. I woke up the next day. Paul Gleason, who's an amazing man that I love so dearly, I shared this adventure with, and he was my boyfriend at the time. And we woke up. We had no idea what we're doing, and we put together a proposal, which is also really funny because for any of the business people watching, I'm 21 years old, and we would go on our lunch hour, and we would go into companies and pitch them. We're like, okay, yes. So I know that I'm not exactly what you're imagining. Don't be thrown off by the fact that I'm like averagely athletic. You know, I don't have any accolades to bring to you, and I've never rode before, but it was like somewhere between the beginning and the end. Like, I think I'll figure it out. Like, I, you know, I'm not going to be fast. You know, I'm just steady Eddie.
Sponsor me 90 grand.
And I was like, yeah, would you like the platinum, the gold, or the silver? Like, so ballsy. And we were thrown out of offices. And then eventually our first sponsor was like at the end of the table and basically was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I was like, and Paul was like leading this one, and he wrote us a check for 10,000 euro. And we literally ran out of the office to the bank.
What?
Like, immediately ran to the bank, like just did not question the abundance. And we're like, and then the pitch was like, well, you know, he did it. So and it got a lot easier. And then I was at one point, like after we did this world tour and this speaking tour, and there was a banker, and we had actually gone in. This also might be why Ireland had a recession, just saying, the Celtic Tiger. I was like 21, and we went and got a loan for a mini, i.e. the boat. And I got financing. I was seeing from the country.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, so he was actually in one of the audiences, the banker. At one of our talks, and we were like, oh, should we mention this? Anyways, so we got half funded and half we took financial responsibility for. In the end, it ended up with just Paul and I, and our friend wasn't able to join us on the journey. We learned astronavigation, sea survival. We spent several months trying to figure out how to row, and we met these wonderful mentors, Eamon and Peter Kavna, from Ireland, and they had rowed across the Atlantic before, and this is so cool. Like, we showed up, and they had this rowing club. And I also actually have a I'm massively afraid of the water still. Like, if we've spent a week together, right? Like, negotiating me to get in the pool was like a big deal. They're like, are you sure you're gonna go through the water? I was like, I didn't get in the water. Okay, I rowed. So we went down to Arklow, which is where in Ireland they're from, mm-hmm. and we knew that they had a boat, and they threw us in a boat, and within 5 minutes the oar, it's like, I'm not that big,
yeah,
picked me up and threw me in the Irish Sea. It's like, oh my god,
we're off to a good start.
Yeah, and I was like flailing in the water because I like not that good of a swimmer because I don't get in the water because I'm afraid of water. And I like pulled myself up into the boat and I just like didn't say anything, and I just kept rowing with the team, and then we just kept showing up, and they just kept abusing us, and we kept showing up, and it was this like beautiful relationship. And then eventually they took us to this pub and like a spit and a handshake. They were like, you can have our boat.
Wow.
Yeah. And they built this boat, and they said under two conditions, you don't rename her. They had named it in the their mother's name, Christina. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they had built this boat. Him and his brother had been one of the first teams to row across the Atlantic. And then the second one is that if you burn my boat, so if you're at sea and for some reason you get rescued or you have to get off your boat, you have to burn it.
Uh-huh.
So you can't leave open wreckage.
Yeah.
So you would have to burn the boat. So Paul had to make a deal that he would never come back to Ireland.
Wow.
So he got the boat, fitted it up, painted it, made it look all spiffy. And then we get to the start line. This is actually an international race where I represented Canada, Paul represented Ireland. And as you would imagine, everybody at the start line was Olympic rowers or from the army or like serious, like these were people who are like, I have got all the rowing accolades and there's nothing left for me. And it never occurred to me until that moment that rowing was a prerequisite. Like James Cracknell, I think he's a multiple time Olympic gold medalist for London, was like, everybody was like, who's this team? Like, we were like the Jamaican bobsled team. And we just like, people were baffled by us because they were just like, nobody knew us on the scene. We had no entourage, no team. We were just like in our like diddly, you know, Irish. And even right before the race, and because we didn't have an entourage like supporting us, before the race, they were like, I messed up the time and they were like calling my name and I was like getting my fucking legs waxed. You know, I was like, girls gotta take care of business.
Hey, before she gets out to
you
see.
You know, if I go down, I'm gonna be a hairy mermaid.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, so I wasn't like what these people were imagining. I think that would be fair to say there's a few people that had some concerns for me.
Yeah.
Also, I called my mom from La Gomera, which is where the race started. And I was like, oh, I'm just loving it here, Mom. It's so good. And she was like, oh, amazing. And I was like, okay, I'll see you on the other side. And she was like, oh, so you're doing that little, you know, the channel. And I was like, it's actually the Atlantic. And she just like couldn't comprehend that. So she, until I was literally getting in a boat, she was like, you're rowing home? You're rowing the Atlantic, like the ocean in between the two continents? I was like, okay, bye, see you later, bye. And then the race kicked off. We ran into all the boats because we didn't know how to fucking row.
Yeah.
So that was embarrassing. Right? People were even more concerned for us. And it was crazy because there was just a little over 30 teams. We all started at one place and the intention was to get to Antigua. This one nautical mile was the cross, the finish line. And it's kind of like starting a race at the top of America and be like, go any way you want. Like there's no roads in the Atlantic. And the first person finished in around 60 days and the last person around 120.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one support boat.
Yeah.
So you can imagine basically you're completely out there on your own. We never saw one other rowing boat.
Wow.
Many of the boats didn't make it. And we had hurricanes, cyclones, tropical storms. And we, for no apparent reason, we thought this was going to take 40 days.
Yeah.
No reason. And it took 86. And that was the other thing. Like we showed up to this international race in this like wooden boat and everybody had these like carbon fiber fancy boats. Our boat was a ton.
Yeah.
Like a ton.
Wow.
And we averaged about 2 to 3 nautical miles, which is like walking speed.
Yeah.
We probably could have walked faster. Or just like by like an airplane ticket.
Yeah.
That was also an option. It was way cheaper, less rest. And I don't know why it didn't occur to me.
So you're in the water. And I know you were saying that you would row 2 hours on, two hours off.
So we are so small that a lot of times with the big ships that you often won't even get picked up mm-hmm. on their radar. So we had to keep the boat so for safety and also to keep yourself on course as best you can. So one person would row for 2 hours and one person would sleep. And we alternated 24 hours a day for 86 days.
Wow.
And that was actually something that was really under anticipated, was how challenging sleep deprivation is.
Yep.
And when you are, I think anybody who's a mother who's watching mm-hmm. this podcast right now will relate, is like, you can almost feel like you're not even in your body.
Yeah.
You're a bit of a zombie, and that was far more challenging than I could have imagined. And then we had freeze-dried food.
Yeah.
Which this is almost, you know, I don't want to even say how many years ago, but like, it's quite a few years ago now. And so astronaut, you know, freeze-dried food isn't what it is today.
Yeah.
And we didn't even have like electrolytes.
Yeah.
We were growing, we were consuming 12,000 ish calories a day, and both lost like around like 20 to 30 pounds.
Wow.
And we just like calorically couldn't keep up. And we were so dehydrated because we didn't even have protein mm-hmm. or electrolytes. And there wasn't the knowledge, which is probably a huge reason also why I became a nutritionist and was so passionate about living food, because you would put something in your mouth and it wasn't alive. So your salivary enzymes, your body didn't turn on.
Mm-hmm.
And I really noted my emotional connection to food and actually understanding what it feels like to have fuel in your body. Mm-hmm. You like do a marathon or you do a big workout and then your body is, you know, crying for fuel mm-hmm. and not food for pleasure, but just fuel, and you eat. It's like an experience of like taking in a drug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to get into some of the nutritional journey as well, and then breast cancer and all of that as well. But just if we pause here, you know, for listeners to talk about, if we look at this as a metaphor for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
So you're basically like completely underqualified, underprepared, like
Out of my capacity.
Don't have your capacity. Yet you feel a knowing of rightness.
Yeah.
You have this instinct that this is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Most of your environment is like, you're absolutely crazy, but you persevere, you get investors, you figure out how to actually make it happen.
Yeah.
And it is bordering that line of like, was this irresponsible?
Yeah.
Or was this actually brilliant?
I love that you brought that up, because I have experienced the same formula in different times of my life that hasn't worked as successfully. And what was the difference is I wasn't coming from the place of the mind. I literally had a knowing. I could see myself with no data crossing the finish line.
Yeah.
Even when I crossed the finish line, it was almost slightly anticlimactic
mm-hmm.
because I had literally already been there. And so in any obstacle, whether it was financing, whether it was like, we also had a huge backlash from our friends.
Mm-hmm.
It was really scary for a lot of people because they couldn't see the vision and the chances of us potentially not making it, and that being around like losing your life or serious injury was very high. So it scared a lot of people. So we had a lot of adversity, and even just getting to the start line was half the battle, which is like launching a company, getting to that first day of like turning the keys on or flipping the switch in your business was almost the greatest adversity, because it's not to be seen yet other than within you.
Yeah.
And it was a physical feeling and a knowing, and probably a time in my life that I had the greatest amount of self-trust. And I just was like young enough and innocent enough, like on your first venture, to follow that. And we had a way of just being able to navigate the no's, the adversity and the lack of belief, and hold the vision.
And so I'm curious, any advice for our listeners? Because I know you have gone on to actually start several different companies and things, you know, since then, of how to recognize that knowing in yourself. When is it time to put it at stake? And when is it time to maybe slow down? And it's such an individualized thing, but any specific advice for someone that might be in this circumstance right now?
I love that, because I think there's a natural, we talked a lot about this in our breath. You breathe in, what follows a breath in, it's a breath out. And the cycles of ups and downs. So for me, I've had a lot of success and keyword ease in the activities I've been doing, regardless of the, you know, how big or small it was, when I can embody and feel it. And when I actually get in myself, I know whether I'm in flow or whether I'm creating something. So to embody that, is it sort of unraveling at the same time as you are in movement? Or do you have a sensation that everything is heavy and everything is hard and you're making it? And when I literally got no's, and this is like the difference, because I have raised money in other ventures. Yeah. When I got no's, there was such an internal belief that it didn't penetrate.
Yeah.
And at another time, at a different state, when I wasn't in full alignment and I was trying to make something happen from my head,
yeah,
and not my heart, I couldn't actually physically, emotionally attach to it, mm-hmm, in an embodied way.
Yeah.
And when I got negative feedback, it really penetrated me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. And we'll go into that a little bit more. And so, like, going full circle on, you know, really, you know, getting your first diagnosis, which happened from the rowing, and then there was the wave.
This is like where it all ties together. And we talked a lot about this in our breathwork course, which I actually, mm-hmm, just recently was able to put some of my own pieces together.
Yeah.
Is just past halfway, I was going up a 60-foot swell, and there's lots of big waves in an ocean, and, you know, your boat can just flow with them. You're like kind of a cork on water in a way, yeah, unless they're curling. And so we had a 60-foot swell, which, just to bring you guys with me, it's like going up a car really fast in San Francisco and, yeah, getting air on a big hill is like what it feels like.
Wow.
So you're at sea with me. So I'm going up this 60-foot swell, and it curls over top of me, and it's the feeling of a fucking animal jumping at my face. Wow. And I held my breath, and it lifted me off the boat. I was harnessed to the boat, and then the boat, with the pressure of a 60-foot swell, comes down. I hit the side of the boat, and I'm under water. And just to back up, because there's one of my favorite stories this year, and anytime I, yeah, get to talk about my dad, I do. So very quickly, the boat snapped back, and Paul pulled me in, and we knew that I was like in really big trouble. I had broken my ribs, and I was violently ill. I'd bruised some of my organs, and I was puking up a lot of bile. And I had to eat like a whole tub of toothpaste. That was the only thing we could think of on this little boat. We were, wow, totally self-contained.
As an antiseptic.
Yeah. And also to just like help my body neutralize all this, yeah, acid that was coming out of me.
Wow.
And it was really intense. And right before I went on this shift, my dad, he works in the Arctic. And my dad is almost like a Luddite, like he nearly, mm-hmm, still has a flip phone.
Yeah.
Like, so how this happened, you know, and because this is so many years ago, cell phones were kind of new. Mm-hmm. And my dad had a dream that I was drowning. And he was so upset by this that he was working in a mine. He went to, wow, surface, got on a caddy, and went to the head office of where he was working. And he figured out how to text my satellite phone, which we did not know could get,
wow,
texts.
Wow, full goosebumps.
And I got this text right before I went on the shift, and it said, push through the pain, face the fear, you're a Viking to Valhalla and back. Wow. And then I went on that shift, and I watched this swell take me off the boat. And if you've ever had a trauma or like a car, mm-hmm, accident, it's weird how things get really slow.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, like, I was going under the water, and I feel like I was really actually connecting with my dad. And so now I'm back in the boat.
Yeah.
And my dad, because of that, was like really with me. And I was laying there, and the boat is just like violently, because we're at the tail end of a hurricane, being, yeah, thrown away around. And I can hear my dad's voice, and he's like, Tor, there's no right or wrong choices, but there's just consequences. Mm-hmm. And I knew that we didn't have enough food,
yeah,
to make it to land,
uh-huh,
if I didn't continue to row. And I also knew emotionally that if I didn't actually get out there right away, if I, yeah, stayed in the cabin and said, okay, Paul, like, we're not going to row, for that, I just like wasn't going to
get back on it,
be able to do it. So I got back on the oars, and if you've ever broken your ribs, the action of pulling,
yeah,
is the most insane. And at this time, I knew I was in big trouble, but we didn't know that they were like, are these broken? Are these not? It was probably, yeah, good that neither of us were doctors, because that was like the worst thing that I could have done. But I start to row, and I'm just like puking all over myself. And I would recite to myself, push through the pain, face the fear, you're a Viking to Valhalla and back. And just intuitively, and I would pull myself out of my body, and I would rise, and almost like on the dot, 15 minutes, I would just disconnect.
Yeah.
And I'd watch myself. I feel no pain. Because people are like, how did you do that? I was, mm-hmm, like, I actually felt no pain.
Yeah.
And I learned recently in our breath workshop is I actually left my body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to be able to deal with this situation. And pain is this wonderful thing when I talk, mm-hmm, about illness and inflammation. And I teach, a lot of my teachings are around this, because I'm very passionate about it, and I've learned it, yeah, is I objectified my body beyond its limits mm-hmm. for means to an end. And I'm so grateful because it saved my life, but it came at a very high cost.
Yeah.
Because the real consequence, the real hurricane was on land. Mm-hmm. So I row this, you know, the next 30 odd days, 12 hours a day in 2 hour shifts. And I'm just not even in my body. And not only am I not in my body, I'm training myself every 2 hours how to get out of my body and not mm-hmm. feel. When your body is screaming at you in pain, yeah. it's saying enough.
Yeah.
So I'm on land, and not a lot of people know this side of my story, but it was one of my darkest moments, was hitting land. We had all the success. We, you know, broke records and nobody expected us to make it. And like a bunch of the Olympic people didn't make it. That was even more like the Irish underdog. They're like, the Irish love you an underdog story. Uh-huh. And I was almost like watching myself. I didn't really experience yeah. it. And so as time went on, I had a hard time like gaining weight and I was so fatigued. And I was like, how can I row 12 hours a day? But I literally yeah. couldn't stand in the pub mm-hmm. for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And our bodies were really imbalanced. We were like jacked in our shoulders, but we hadn't walked for 3 months. So mm-hmm. our calves were totally atrophied. The yeah. Bottoms, the arches of our feet collapsed. Wow. So there's all these major imbalances. You're 21. You don't even know what physio is. You're like, oh, that's okay. I just rode across the Atlantic. I'm like, gone with my life now. And I started to get lumps in my left breast.
Yeah.
And I was so disconnected to my body. And I also didn't have support, which is like another big mm-hmm. thing in your own self-discovery. It can really make a difference. And this is also pre-WebMD. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't, like, you know, I wasn't a doctor. I didn't know what that meant. But I went to actually the breast clinic in Dublin, and because I was so young, they actually didn't, they were like, you're too young, and they didn't even check me.
Wow.
Yeah, I went with my girlfriend. Then I went to a doctor, and I, it might have been his first day at work or the first pair of boobs he's ever touched. And he was like, and then he gave me antibiotics for mastitis.
Wow.
Which at the time, again, there's no WebMD. I didn't even know
what.
And mastitis, just for anybody who doesn't know, is when you get a blocked milk duct that gets infected after you've had a baby. I clearly had not had a baby. So it was total misdiagnosis. I'm just not able to recover. I came back to Canada. Paul stayed mm-hmm. in Ireland as we were figuring out how to have him immigrate yeah. to Canada. And then I went and was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer on the left breast. And that is the same side that I broke my ribs. And
yeah.
So as I had this experience, and I just want to preface that, you know, I made decisions around my cancer, which I'm going to share, and just put it in a container that I was at a stage that I felt that I could make these decisions and I had the right care team. And I also went all in.
Yeah.
So I just want everybody to hear that as I share the story. But as I was diagnosed, I have a gene called BRCA. Mm-hmm. And this basically is a precursor to different types of cancers. And, you know, the question that came out for me immediately was like, well, why have I manifested this and not my cousins or other yeah. people in my family? Although there's lots of cancer in my family, not necessarily related to this gene. And it became really clear to me around a personal accountability that I had actually created a condition in my body. And so I was like, what is the condition? The condition I was able to connect was the inflammation I created from the break.
Yeah.
And because I didn't allow my body that rest time and that heal, I created the perfect soil for a seed that I already had to basically
grow. Yeah.
And how that showed up for me was in breast cancer. So originally we discussed having, you know, a double mastectomy, and
yeah.
a large part of that was prevention. And I was like very confused with how can this earth suit row across the Atlantic, and then the concept of like I might not be able to survive my own body was yeah. like, and I kept asking questions, and I personally had the experience that I was almost antagonizing my care providers mm-hmm. by asking these questions. And I was like, how can I heal if I go through this afraid of my body? Mm-hmm. And how can I heal if I'm not included in the healing conversation? And yeah. so what I experienced a lot of was that we could fix a problem, but I interpreted it as I was going to sign up for a lifetime of fear. And that was not it was a choice that I yeah. didn't want to make. So as I have done clearly running across the Atlantic, I went my own way. I was very grateful. I was able to have a lumpectomy and I was at an early stage. So this allowed me to have like crisis intervention, which the Western medical institute and you know, body is so great at, and I was so grateful. And I then took my care out of anybody's hands, and this empowered me. This was actually the gift that got me back in my body.
Wow.
Yeah. Cancer. So for me, it's like, I have a philosophy or something I say to myself in all adversity is, what is the gift in this? Even in my darkest moments, like, what is the gift in this? That's like, can be really patronizing if anybody else asks you that. So you should just ask yourself. You're like, fuck you. But the gift for me was that I was not operating in my body, which did not allow me to be in flow and alignment. I was not experiencing my best life, regardless of externally looking like I was. And that's the key point. And cancer showed up to be like, hey, dude, you're not in your body. So because you can't listen to the whispers, because you're not even proxy, like you're not even close enough, I'm going to fucking scream at you until it's undeniable, and you're going to choose whether you want to be on this earth or not.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going earthbound. Hopped in the earth suit. And this has really inspired the whole foundation of everything that I'm about and that I want to create in this lifetime. Between the row and this experience at a very young age, it gave me a humility around what it means to be a human, and without fear, just how precious this time is, and like, what do you want to do and how do you want to feel in what you want to do?
Yeah. So let's pause there for a second. And I think particularly being out of body, and I think a lot of, you know, just listeners, right? You talk about, you know, maybe one of you hearing this is, you know, you go to a job or you're in your routine where you literally, like, you autopilot on the way to work, you autopilot at work, you autopilot when you come home. And there is this sense of being out of body. And maybe you don't even distinguish it as I'm in body or I'm out of body. Maybe you don't even have that awareness yet. But it's just this feeling of like lifelessness or just lack of presence.
Yeah. And also too, like, we talked a lot about this in our course, just the spectrum of like, it's not about, in a way, feeling better. It's about getting better at feeling.
Yeah.
And unless you are in your body, you cannot expand your capacity. And it's really hard to have your best human life if your capacity is like this big, because you're not even in the circumstance. And, you know, over the years, I work with a lot of people who have also been facing illness. And that is a common theme that I have observed in others, is that, you know, our bodies, there's a misbelief that like there's something wrong with our body. And this is my belief, that your body is always on your side and it is your best doctor and it always is in alliance with you. And so often when we're creating a tremendous amount of inflammation in our body, there's a lack of skills and understanding on how to be in conversation with our body. And I say this not to be patronizing, but I have struggled with this in objectifying my body multiple times to get results. And at the cost of, you know, the reality is, which we'll talk a little bit later about some Ayurvedic stuff, is that like I constitutionally am very sensitive. And so I have this ebb and flow of being in choice with my body of, am I going to listen to you or am I going to take the consequence? But at the end of the day, making the choice, like, it's not happening to you.
Yeah.
It's happening for you. And so now I actively am like, I don't need a tsunami. I'm just gonna like take the rest day on just the normal person sick day.
Which isn't that,
you know? It's like every entrepreneur I feel like needs to hear that, because it's like we make the rest so bad, but we, you know, it's like you have to breathe in and then you have to breathe out, and we have these beautiful bell curves, and we can't, it's against the laws of nature to just push and push and push. And I see this as like on a spectrum of like inflammation. So it's like, as you push, as you build, inflammation just inherently like rises. And then as we relax and as we breathe out, or like the rest time, it goes down. And so it's like, what, like feeling really healthy in my experience has been a sense of momentum. You know, it's not about not getting sick. It's like, how quick do you bounce? Whether that's emotional health as well. It's not about not having heartbreak, but it's being like, can I recover? Can I forgive?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know you went on to essentially, you know, build several different companies, and, you know, you grew Nectar Juicery up. You also wrote this beautiful book, Beauty Water, in 32 days, which is crazy. You've raised a bunch of money. You've done a lot of different things in that regard. And what would you say has been the essence of your teachings? Like, in the sense that, if there was a message that you could have heard and that you wish that you could impart knowing what you know now, what would you say?
Such a good question. so many things. It's so hard to answer in one thing, but what's coming up for me right now is I think I would have worked harder at being a well-being instead of a well-doer. Mm. I am a master at doing shit.
Yeah.
And in this next paradigm of my life, I want to do shit and feel good. Mm-hmm. And so if I could speak to my younger self, I would be like, you want to get really good at a skill? Mm-hmm. Feeling good. That'd be the one.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we take that a step further, what do you think constitutes, like, for you, you know, that feeling good? Like, if you look at what's a protocol that you use, and I'm sure it's dynamic, meaning it's changing, and for every person it changes. But if you were to impart on some of our listeners some of that formula so they can start to be in that own self-reflective inquiry, what are some of those components?
So what taught me to be in a place that I can be embodied, which is key to feeling your best life, is you got to be there.
Yeah.
And then the second part is being in relationship with yourself. And what does that really mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to touch on that. And then also wellness. Like, I don't think we're it's not homeostasis. I always call it homeodynamic because we're always changing. We're always moving. So for me, I had to figure out how to get a sense of wellness momentum. And as an example of this is, you know, when you're really well, it's easy to add a bunch of things because there's already a momentum. Yeah. And when we're at a place of illness, it's like somebody being like, oh, go to yoga. And you're like, what? You know, the leap from here to here is greater than it is from here to here. And so how do we stay in this zone?
Yeah.
And for me, it's been working with a wellness wheel, which is the four pillars of health. Mm-hmm. And that's movement, it's nutrition, it's spirit, and it's rest. And what I have commonly seen in my past life and when I work with people in doing wellness strategies, particularly CEOs, is that I end up actually taking out 90% of what they're doing because they might have all the supplements or all the best workout, but then nothing in the spirit or no rest. And understanding that this is a wheel that is rolling, right? And so we even say things that are intuitive, like I feel off track. Well, you're probably missing a section. The wheel is wobbling.
Yeah.
I feel run down. There's not enough investment. Mm-hmm. So there's just no motion, no momentum. And so if we actually thought of our wellness as like, we need to like put a little coin of self-love into our wellness wheel every day to keep a sense of momentum so that we can balance. Yeah. And so what that has looked like for me is actually stripping away a lot of things because I think it's easy to have a wellness to-do list. Mm-hmm. And I want to have a wellness to feel list.
Yeah.
And so I might look at your nutrition and this is what I did for me and be like, I don't need all the things, but what am I going to do consistently that evokes a feeling? Because your body will say, this is good for me or not if we tuck in. Mm-hmm. So I might be like, okay, I'm going to work with one of my favorite plant medicines to work with is Reishi.
Yeah.
She helps with your boundaries. She's sentient. We can have a whole podcast about just my friend Reishi. For all the women entrepreneurs out there, shout out Vari and Reishi. Amazoning it right now. But so I would make
upcoming attractions for the giveaway.
Yes.
Listeners, by the way, we're going to talk more about these.
More about, so I would say if I was going to do Reishi, I wouldn't be just like, okay, I'm going to do the supplement.
Yeah. Which is a mushroom. Comes from, for those that,
it's a mushroom.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't just
illegal like, mushroom.
Illegal,
non-psychotropic.
Yeah. So what I would do is I would be like, okay, if I was going to bring something into my wellness wheel, and I really protected this as something that was like the essence of me. Mm-hmm. If I'm not taking care of my wheel, then I'm not taking care of. And I would look at Reishi and I'd be like, okay, so here's like the nutrition piece. I'm going to work with Reishi. So how do I want to feel? What does Reishi make me feel? So for me, Reishi is like the Pavlovian link to grounding.
Yeah.
So then I put a time to it. Be like, I'm going to have this in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing all the other things, but there's like a sequence to this. So I'm going to have Reishi, I'm going to have it in the morning, you know, and then physiologically Reishi helps you sleep. So that was my investment. So then before I went to bed, I connected my mantra to actually being in the state of rest because this is the medicine that Reishi gives you. Uh-huh. And then movement. Yeah. It was like, now my body was in a better place. So then when I was in movement, I was doing actually like movements that were related to actually physiologically what Reishi supports. So instead of doing all the things, I just did one thing and made sure that it connected
to the four.
So that everything built on itself. And then you don't need to do all the things.
Yeah.
You need to be connected to what you do. And that was the shift for me in my wellness. And that's what I'm really passionate to teaching people. And the other thing too, is like no nutritionist knows how you feel. doctor knows how you feel, naturopath, Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic, nobody knows how you feel. Nobody knows how you feel. That's all I'm going to say. You know how you feel. And so it's getting in a place where you're able to actually articulate that so that you can understand your own contrast.
Yeah.
And then play. And then wellness becomes not this like big list, but you can start to play. And yeah, that in itself is joyful.
Yeah. I love all that. So listeners, we're about to jump into the rapid fire round, which is going to be a series of lightning questions coming at you. We've got this amazing giveaway if you've been digging this conversation, because I know Ayurvedic practices and even understanding how do some of these things like Reishi and some of these others, how do they connect into your everyday life? And just a little meta context for me, I've always been fascinated, you know, when I started moving away from conventional medicine into herbology, into understanding like naturopath stuff, and this isn't a one size fits all, I mean, try it out on your own radar, I found so many results. And even like alcohol, it's not something I drink very often, but we were out at the cafe last night, and given our concoctions a bit watered down, it was like we were drinking these aphrodisiac, you know, little shots. And I remember this guy, this Australian guy, we had like 6 health shots, and he's like, you know, and there's beers and they're like smoking cigarettes, and they're like, are you ladies having health shots? Yeah, are you like boozing it up, partying it up with your health shots? And I was like, well, actually, you know, there's some really great effects that you can experience from that, that in my opinion are actually even better than alcohol, because it creates an even like better natural high inside of you. And especially at the events that, you know, I do, unconventional life events, I always have a value of kind of introducing different things. But for those that are new in this conversation around using herbs, around tinctures, around like wellness drinks, around adaptogens, right? Like maybe some of you have heard these words, but how do they connect? Can you break it down in a really simple way, very briefly? And that's, I think, going to set us up for where we're going to go.
So I would probably lead in with adaptogens. Mm-hmm. I love working with adaptogens for a couple of reasons. Is they're exactly how they sound. They help the body adapt. Yeah. So this is generally quite a safe herb to work with. A lot of other herbs, unless you're working with a care provider, mm-hmm. if you're not sure, it's best to actually have support. Yeah. But if something says an adaptogen, more often than not, it's really safe to use. And how I describe them mm-hmm. is they're a plant that you work in relationship with, and they're kind of like taking your internal physiology to the gym.
Yeah.
The idea is that they stimulate or they support strengthening the organ that then gives the action, if that makes sense. So as an example, really well known is ashwagandha, which can have supporting action on our stress hormones, thyroid and adrenal glands. So it's not regulating the hormones, it's strengthening the gland so that the gland can do the work. So you don't get reliant on them. It's supporting your body coming into homeostasis. And again, it's not doing the job, which is why I call it, it's like your personal trainer for your inside body. Mm-hmm. And inflammation, aging is basically the atrophying and the aging of our internal organs, which is just like our external skin. And we understand that we have to go to the gym to keep this tone. And that in turn that keeps like a level of youthfulness and energy. But we don't think that the inside is made of the same things. And we actually have to do the same thing. Is that is the key to really great health, is the tonification of your internal organs. Mm-hmm. And then I love recommending elixirs to people. And the reason why is that we have to drink water to live. That's like the thing that no matter what, if you, I guarantee this is like the one thing that nobody's going to push back on me is that like you drink more water and you're going to feel better.
Yeah.
Like that's just, that's it.
Yeah.
So why not use your water as the conduit to give yourself an intention when we think of that wellness wheel to be in relationship with your body. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And take your internal organs to the gym.
Yeah.
So that's like, point your attention in the direction you want it to go. Just drinking the water is going to make you feel better.
Yeah.
And when you drink, your body is really in a receiving mode. You can absorb it very easily. Mm-hmm. So that just gives like an efficiency. And it is a personal belief of mine that we talk a lot about nutrition, but we don't often talk about what does it mean to put your body in the receiving mode.
Yeah.
And I think that that is actually 50% mm-hmm. of, if you have all the perfect nutrition in the world and you're really stressed out and you're eating, running around, and you only get 20%, like, should you have that whole foods bill?
Yeah.
Right? It's almost like a bigger conversation. So when you drink, it's just a lot easier for your body to be in the receiving mode.
Yeah.
So that is my 2 cents on that. And then Ayurveda, I'm really passionate about Ayurveda because Ayurveda is a framework of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we should be taught this literally in school. Mm-hmm. because it's learning how to be in conversation with your body. So different constitutions have different pathways of disease. So as an example, for me, a lot of people are like, oh, you've had cancer and breast, you know, and I was like, actually it's a blessing because I actually know where to look to be in conversation. Every time that I have an over-inflammatory load, I know exactly where it's going to go. So I actually can be in relationship with my physiology and not have fear, right? Just getting in your own conversation.
Yeah.
And different constitutions thrive in different ways. And this can really get help you with wellness shame, I call it, which is real because you're like, oh, I saw my friend do this diet. She was like amazing. And then I did it and I was constipated for 6 weeks, you know, or, you know, one person loves cold plunging and really thrives. And the next person finds that slightly traumatic and loses their breath and, you know, changes the breath pattern. Yeah. One person can do the raw food diet and another person doesn't thrive. And so it can start to feel really overwhelming. And I hear this often in the wellness space, like I'm just overwhelmed and I'm doing all the things and I'm kind of getting the results. I'm kind of not, but I don't really know what's happening and why. If you understand your foundation of your own body and your uniqueness, then the decision-making gets actually quite easy because like 80% of what's presented to you, you'll immediately be like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of a bit of a Ayurveda pusher, like a bit of a bully about the whole thing, you know, because I just feel like we can wake up and have agency in our health if we have an understanding of ourself.
Absolutely. So much more that I want to dive in with you on. I feel like you and I could chat for hours. And we will continue sweating in the heat of Bali for hours.
You know
people
pay big money for this. It's called sweat.
Totally. Yeah. So let's jump into the rapid fire round. Listeners, if you've been loving this conversation, this book, Beauty Water, we're going to talk about this just after the giveaway, but also to this conversation of how do I even start with elixirs? Like, do I find the ingredients at my grocery store? What the heck is an elixir? I've heard of an adaptogen. Like, how do I even know what's right for me? And I know you've actually broken that down in this beautiful recipe book. But instead of it being like food recipes, it's like elixir recipes and also how to start to find, it's like if I'm needing energy or if I'm actually, you know, wanting better skin or what specifically you're looking towards, it's broken down in the book. So stay tuned. We're going to go there just after the rapid fire round. Tori, I've got a few lightning questions coming at you. Are you ready?
Oh my God, I don't know. I was nervous. Okay.
Okay. Question number one, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
Really knew me, you would know that I'm really introverted.
Yeah, that's why we're good roommates.
Yeah, that's why we were really good roommates. But it's something that most people are like, no, you're not. And I'm very introverted.
Yeah. Next question. If you could break down one practice that you do regularly that you feel really sets you up for success, what would you say that is?
100% meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, if there was one thing on this podcast that I could be from an entrepreneur perspective in relationship to mental stamina and emotional stamina, when I learned how to meditate, I realized that I never had a conversation. I never actually had a language to speak to myself. And I learned to speak to others before I learned to be able to go inside and meditation. And there's also hundreds of forms of meditation. So I had to find a language that was right for me. And it didn't come to me easily. I was one of those people that was like, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And just like there's thousands of languages on earth. And then when I was able to go in, I could see that my internal climate was actually not aligned with my external.
Yeah.
And that was the thing of my entire life that has shifted absolutely everything and changed, allowed me to be in like a space of being a human being versus a human just doing a bunch of shit.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Next question for you. What is one book or resource that you've been reading lately that you feel like's really stoking your fire and getting you excited?
I feel like I have really dry.
And it could be like, it could be a podcast, could be anything.
Well, we've been in Bali and we've been offline.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi is like a thing here. Well, like your podcast, but I would say it sounds a little bit corny, but I am a big lover of the Soul Sunday.
Oprah.
Yeah. And I listen to Eckhart Tolle's So yeah, that's the thing you're going to find on my phone all the time.
Love that. Lastly, what does living the unconventional life mean to you?
Living an unconventional life to me is having the courage to be in curiosity, to be able to lean into your deepest expansion and live like your best human life. So for me, it's about like having courage to be you.
Yeah.
And that's like, in some ways seems like the easiest thing, but I think as a human, we're not broken, but we all came here to heal.
Yeah.
And so part of that is being you. And that's like the whole human journey for most of us is just figuring out that one piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. Tori Holmes, everyone. Tori, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
Okay. So we are going to give you some Beauty Water swag. And I am really stoked. Whoever wins this, I'm going to recommend for you a recipe. Now, how I designed the book is because this, I recognize this can be a little bit overwhelming, mm-hmm. is that the book is going to help you hydrate. The idea is you come to it and you are going to choose how you want to feel. So you're like, I want to work on my mood. I want to work on my brain. I want to work on my sexuality. Maybe I've got hormone stuff. You know, I have one recipe in here that's like, if you're in your 30s and you lost your sex drive, it's actually hanging out in the backyard on a pine cone called pine pollen. It might not even need to go to the store, you know? And, you know, you can make yourself a nice little, like, it's almost like a champagne spritz. So that way, if no date shows up, you just like date yourself, which you're actively working on, you know? And the idea is that you create a relationship between you and this plant, and that you work with the plant for a month at a time. So don't go out and buy everything in the book.
Yeah.
Just choose one and commit to it. And then the other part of it is depending on your region, is even just starting with taking watermelon and basil and lime and putting that, you know, the ends of your fruit right in your water. Gives extra minerals.
Yeah.
It also puts you, I believe, in the receiving mode because you're looking at beauty. And that is actually like beauty when it's in balance and at its best. So no matter where you are, you can start. And we have everything from like detox and flu season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. And listeners, to win the opportunity to get this amazing book, Beauty Water, you can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com, click on the giveaway tab. And Tori, for those that want to get the book, I know you've also designed it in an interesting way that it comes as a product with this incredible water bottle. So where can they go find the book and particularly the water bottle?
There is thousands of lifestyle stores across the US that you will be able to find this. So look for Porter, which is the bottles. You can get us on obviously Amazon and all the bookstores. You can go into places like Urban Outfitters and West Elm, and you're going to find all sorts of Porter products.
Yeah. Amazing.
And we'll see if we can throw in a water bottle for our giveaway.
Yeah. Amazing. So Beauty Water by Tori Holmes, you can check that out. And then Tori, I know you are on this curiosity tour right now, which you have just been traveling about. I know you've starting potentially a podcast as well. You are in the process of writing a few different books. We might be working collectively on some type of CBD product as well. But, you know, for those that want to follow along on your journey, stay in touch. What's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, so you can find me at Tori Holmes Life on Instagram. You can also find me at Tori Holmes, my website. And where you're going to find me this year is creating plant non-psychotropic plant medicine products and doing wellness, emotional and mental health, dueling for really profound CEOs who are doing wonderful things in the world. So if you're in that space, reach out to me. And yeah, this is a year in total transparency where, you know, I've changed a lot of things and I'm, you know, being a child again and just being committed to curiosity. That is like my intention for this year. Just let it be, let it come, and just being curious.
Yeah, so good.
Thank you.
And for those that want to meet Tori, she will be on the entrepreneurship boat this summer with us. So Unconventional Lifers, we are bringing 500 amazing entrepreneurs, artists, creatives on a super luxurious ship going through the Mediterranean this summer for 5 days. So experiential learning, innovation, transformation, impact. It's going to be all the things. So unconventionallifeshow.com. You can find the details for that. Tori, thank you so much for chatting with our listeners.
And
yes, I feel like we'll need a part two of the podcast. There's so much more story of Tori, and I love where we went today. So
thank you so much, Jules.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Unconventional Lifers, we'll have more amazing content coming at you guys soon.